Welcome to The Bigger Picture. I'm your host, Dakari Eli. I am also the editor-in-chief of Urban Magazine, which you've been on not one, but two covers.
Awesome. Okay. I didn't know what the connection was. That came nice. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you had the opportunity to talk to my business partner and publisher, Ben, Be an Original. Yes? Excellent. Mm-hmm. Now, we love everything that you contribute. We awesome. Really do. So thank you.
I appreciate y'all. I didn't know. I get it. That was a fun cover. I appreciate that. That was good, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, again, we appreciate everything you do on and off camera. I mean, you're an actor, you're a comedian, you know, you're a photographer. You are also like a low-key fashion consultant, I think.
Hey, I do a little bit of some stuff. I try to, you know, help a couple people out with the little I know, but people listen, so it's all right.
We put stuff together very well, so I think it's coming from a source of knowing. So that's good.
Good. I appreciate it. I try to.
Now, we've seen you in several types of roles as an actor. Again, we know that the Hustle, Baller, Raising Kanan. Now, all these roles are so different. When you read the scripts, what inspires you to pick these roles? What inspires you to audition for them?
You know, initially, anytime I got a script that comes in, I'm always checking to see how well it's written. Like, how's the flow of the dialogue? And because that plays, you can tell a lot from how a project is going to do by how well it's written. So if the writing sounds unrealistic or it sounds too choppy or just confusing, I'm like, I ain't gonna do that. Or, you know, if I don't feel like the role can stretch me on some sort of level. Because sometimes, you know, it's not even about if the role is super dramatic or whatnot, but it really comes down to, I'm like, well, is there some sort of challenge within this? Because sometimes, you know, if the role isn't, when I say easy, I mean like in the sense that if there's no sort of stretch, then I'm like, well, am I really growing from this? How is it different from anything else I've gotten done? I was okay. Especially because I'm like still a very, fairly new face. So it's like, all right, let me try to show these casting people some range early. You know, so if that one moment it might be doing something for BET, because I'm like, okay, that audience may not necessarily be the same one from Balls. So let me go tap in and do a nice little Christmas something over there for. I got to think about my mother and my aunties and my people that go to church. I'm like, okay, I gave y'all something. Let me get over here to this Ballers thing. It's a great look playing with those actors, and that's a good look playing across from Dwayne. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like something Asia A where I played. I was like in a wheelchair. I was wheelchair bound and dealing with a spinal issue. I said, even though that was a short, just I felt like, man, that was a nice little challenge to me. Even though it was a short, it was a very intense week. We shot that thing, but I was like, cool, that's a little different. I got to play. I can't move my legs in this particular thing. Right. And then we get something, you know, all the way to something like Raising Kanan, where just within that character, within that show, has a lot of different beats going on with him. So
yeah,
I like that too. So.
So you just kind of like to feel your way around and you like to kind of stretch your palate, it sounds like, a little bit.
Now, I try to.
When it comes to the role, now, which role was this? I did read that you won a Best Actor award at the film festival. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, that was for the short film called Asia A. Like I said, the character's dealing with a spinal injury, which was actually the story of the director. So shout out to Andrew, and yeah, he was going through this, like, he was directing even with a cane, like, he's still going through the treatments and everything like that, so to have access to that story directly,
yeah,
was another reason I had to, that helped me to stretch and lock in, because again, not like some random story, he was able to tell me directly, like, nah, We wouldn't do this. These are the exercises we do. This is what that feels like. So that was they approached me with that. So that was going. Then also stuff like that. Like I never know if people, you know, are going to even acknowledge it the way they did. But doing that, had I said I don't want to do that because it's a short film, I wouldn't have won that award. So everything.
Well, right, and I think there's a level of learning. There's a level of knowledge that you're going to gain too. You know, whether it be from, again, the director that had the actual experience, right? But I mean, I guess my question is what did you learn about yourself through the role?
Oh, you know, sometimes this was a short thing that I got from that is there was an actress in the who played like my love interest in this film, and this is no shade to her, you know, everybody was dope. But what I did notice is that I needed to connect emotionally with her in the scene, but I wasn't able to do that for whatever the reason was. It wasn't happening. Right. But my co-star, even though he was playing a very comedic role, I was able to lock in with him emotionally and then get that back to her. And the lesson in that is that sometimes it's not that she wasn't doing a good job. She did a phenomenal job. I just, whatever it was, I'm pulling energy from the male actor. And he's bedridden. I had to go there, hold that, do what I need to do, process it over here. So this to say sometimes a lot of actors, well, I won't say a lot, but there's some actors, they will pull from what if something has happened. They think about some man, what if my grandmother passed, I lost my dog. And I'm not thinking about what if something happened. All I have to pull from is what has happened. You know, so I'm pulling from real time, what's really going on in the process and the scene and doing the mental and emotional work so that by the time they call action and you want those tears or whatever it is, I can tap into that because I've been breaking this stuff down. So
you really don't pull from any of your own personal experiences when you act?
Not in that regard, because, you know, for me, yes and no, in the sense that all this stuff is really personal. So these characters essentially cry when we cry and feel we feel. So I have to really figure that out. But I do realize that I think my style is more so being very present and not so much trying to think of things in my mind when I lost that person. I just got to be very, very present. But at the same time, I am pulling from me. That's why the character, when the characters cry or laugh, whatever that is, that's all me emotionally. So even though the scenarios aren't my real life, emotionally, those characters, they feel what we feel because they have to. They're using us to come.
Yeah, to come full center, to come to the forefront.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, well, you know, you were in a few different movies you were in a few different things. So now, first of all, you were a rapper, okay, in The Hustle. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you were delivering those bars on time. Is there like some unknown underground mixtape?
No. Well, you know what? Who's to say? No, you know what it is? I listen to hip hop on a regular basis anyway. Yeah. So even that's the kind of thing where that would be pulling from the real life stuff, which is everybody rapping their car.
That's right.
We're black, so we got some rhythm and we're gonna hear the beat and all that stuff. It'd be different if they wanna be rap in Vietnamese, and I'd be like, okay, well, maybe we gotta think about that. I'm like, these songs, man, the challenge in that one was I had manifested before I did that. I said, man, I would really like a career where I get to work comedy clubs during the day. I mean, comedy clubs at night and then work and shoot whatever the series was or the film during the day.
Right,
now,
right,
right. That sounds fun, and it is, but it's also a lot of work that I didn't really anticipate because I was filming Ballers. No, Ballers at the time. I was working comedy clubs at the time. And I'm already getting out late, but then I got to go to the studio, learn the lyrics, record, be back up 6 a.m. in the morning. So I was like, I actually, man, I said, I gotta really think about the stuff I'm talking about, because I projected it and it happened. But I was like, yeah, it was a lot of work, you know, because it takes so much time to, like, you gotta study that stuff, man. Well, at least if you care too well, you wanna study.
Right. But people don't think that. I think people take for granted the hard work that it takes to actually be a great rapper, lyricist, artist. It really does. It takes a lot of work. You're in there, grueling hours. I'm sure, as you know, even as an actor, grueling hours. You know, it looks all like fun and games on the outside, but, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. You
That's
know?
What I was thinking about, and I was dreaming from just that little series, but I'm not a little serious. From that series, shout out to Princess Penny, because I had a great time on that show. But what I realized, like you said, these rappers are going into the booth. They got the take, and you know, especially if they're perfectionists, and you got, then you think about somebody like Michael Jackson, who I remember Rodney Jerkins was talking about, Michael used to go through like 3 white t-shirts because he's singing and performing in the booth every take. That's why I said, respectfully, I remember after that project, I got a lot of respect for these rappers, man, because it sounds cool in the club or in the car, but at some point, it goes out. So, a lot of respect.
Speaking of working it out, I mean, you had a chance to work next to Dwayne Johnson. Tell me what that was like for you. I mean, I'm sure it was very inspirational in other ways. I mean, he strikes me as the type of person, because I do, I follow him. He's very funny. Is he like that on set too? Because you're very funny. So I can't even imagine the two of you together.
we had our moments. There's certain scenes where I remember my character, I think season 2, my character had to pass a note to Dwayne Johnson's character, basically asking for my client's pay raise. Mm-hmm. And every time in between, I would just write something very ridiculous on the note to make him break, you know, the scene. But at the same time, Dwayne, I thought I was meeting The Rock, and I didn't meet The Rock. I met Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne Johnson's a little more, you know, he's like, and I want to meet the people's champ, and it's two different people. But I will say he got a lot of presence. I don't, you know, when he's on set, you could feel the shift of everybody. It's just it's an energy he come with, you know. But I also learned some discipline. I remember one day, my call time, I'd be on set like something like 6, 5 in the morning. I'd get up to drink some water in the middle of the night. Happen to catch Instagram, he's in the gym 3 hours.
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm like, what? But it changed my. I said, man, if Dwayne can get up and still get the set on time and all that stuff, I said, that was one thing I took from my. I made it part of my discipline, which is before I get to set, I definitely try to get up, hit the gym, wake up, and be in my mind. But so he's really influential in that way, and he is funny. Real, real kind, you know, funny. You know, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he seems like he has a lot of humility, as do you. You know, it seems like humility is actually a cornerstone for you. And
that's the truth. That's the truth, man. Because look, on a very basic level, if we keep our feet on the ground, when we fall, it will. When we fall, it won't be very far. This is just on a very basic level, I'd much rather keep myself humble than let God do it. I'm like, I got it. Let me do what I can do to stay grounded, man, because it's this, the analogy I like to give is, you know, our talents, our gifts are not for us. So it's like, who flosses in a rental car? Like, it's not, this stuff ain't mine. I'm just of it, and I'm just the vessel being used to do this. I'm not going to be walking around like this stuff just came to, like, I'm the, no.
You mean like we have people floss in the rental chains too? Because they floss in a lot of different things.
All kind of stuff. I'm like, man, I know this is God's stuff. I ain't got nothing to do with this. I'm just glad I was the recipient of it, you know? So that's why, unselfishly, I got to get this art out. I got to share what I know or what I can, whether it's photography or whatever. It's not mine.
And I'm glad that you brought up the photography. I saw that you were photographing homeless people, and I know a little bit about the story as to why, but I'd
Okay.
like to hear from you. I'd like to hear from you.
Initially, this started. This goes back to I was before the TV stuff and stand up. I was working in after school, Boys and Girls Club, and all that stuff. The kids, we were giving snacks after school, and I was noticing that the kids, because they weren't like cool snacks, they would waste the snacks and the apples and stuff. I'm like, it's too much food going to waste, too much. So I began to package.
That's old school. That's old school thinking right there. I hear you. No, you got my heart right there. I feel you. Go
That's
ahead.
the truth. If some of us know we not finna just be wasting no food. So I was packing up the food. Then I began to take it down to the homeless, Skid Row in LA and different, places to feed them. And once you saw how grateful they were to receive that PB&J sandwich and that pear, it's like, yo. And so at the same time, I started getting into photography. But I didn't feel my skills were, I need to practice. So I have a conversation with the homeless people. And I would basically feed them. We dialogue. We gain some trust. And I said, yo, man, would you mind if I photographed you? And he said, yeah. So all of this is to say that it's still such a process. But I'm photographing these folks to make a book, a coffee table book. And with a little bit of the story in it, and some of the proceeds be going to them. But the reason I think this is important because while we sit up in our AC places in the house and we wear our shoes, all watch our TV with full internet,
That's right.
it's important, I think, for us just to remember that there are people out here who don't have, we got to be grateful. That's all.
Yes, we do. And I completely relate to that because, I mean, walking through, like going through a lot of neighborhoods in New York City, you're going to have people that are they're in need of money.
Right.
Okay. Now, I will never give enough money to go broke just because, I just don't I didn't say I don't have it right now. But I have a child. My daughter asked me, she said, "Well, why are you giving them money? How do you know? How do you know that?" I said, "What's it going to hurt to give them a dollar?" Because despite whatever the story is, we don't know what the story is, And what's it going to hurt me giving them a dollar?
Yeah.
Right?
Right, right.
So you never know what someone's story is, and you never know that little glimmer of light that you've shown them can, I don't, you never know. It can do so much more than you realize, and I think people take that for granted every day.
I agree with that. And also, because people have asked me that too. You said, man, how do you know if what you're giving, they're going to do what they say they're going to do? They might go drink or whatever. And it's really simple, which is my job is not to be a detective to find out what people are going to do with what
Judge.
that's between them and God. My
That's
job is simply be obedient whenever my heart feels compelled to do that. Sometimes people scamming and you can see them. But I'm talking
Yeah, of
about
course.
genuinely, when I give, my job is just to give and then let it go, not to follow them and see. That's whatever. If they didn't tell the truth, they got to deal with that karma, deal with whatever those consequences are.
That's
That's
right.
on. I release that stuff because, like I said, we don't know. And then at the same time, like you mentioned, that we don't really know. So I'm like, hey, if they need food, because they really need food, this is what I realized. When I'm down here, I'm saying down here because I got to go, in fact, give some stuff away today. But when I realized that everybody down here is not just drugs and alcohol, like there's some people who really just fell off, they lost their job, the pandemic hit, people come back from the war, they've been down, they divorced, they went into a depression. It's talented musicians down there.
That's
I
right.
mean, this is why I had those conversations because growing up, I used to cut hair in a rehab center. So I've always been around street people, ex-convicts, gang members, and so forth. And I've seen people make really life change. I've seen them come from the streets to become youth leaders and pastors and graduates of school and married.
Yes.
I've seen the process. So when fortunately, I was exposed to this kind of thing or street people very early on. So my perspective on these folks isn't so dismissive, because I know a lot of people can turn around, and I've seen them turn around, you know, and get their life together. And then, you know, some of the people, they, like I said, they destitute, but they really solid, they good people. They just dealing some hard times. And also I give because I'm grateful that I don't have to live like that.
Yes.
There's a whole lot of reasons to give. I'm like, yo, thank you guys, that's not me. Here go a dollar. For
a dollar. It's a dollar.
A dollar, me going back to my warm apartment or getting on first class, man, take this dollar and take that to here, these clothes. You know,
yeah, because again, you don't know where people have come from. I mean, even if they're on drugs, you don't know what could have brought them to that terrible place. You know, being on drugs or having an issue with any type of substance is not something that you should be jailed for. It happens, and you don't know what it stems from. There's a lot of trauma in the world, you know. Yeah. So, you know, that's why humility is top of the list. Absolutely. Now, with your comedy, how has comedy played a role in your humility? Or because I know that comedians will use stories or their trauma within their stand-up comedy, within, you know, the jokes that they create. So how has humility played a role in your comedic performances?
Real simple, in the sense that every night we don't really know if we are gonna laugh.
I knew, like, you about to say.
we you know, the thing that helps us get through is that for some of us, we know that we're in the clubs nightly, so we're always working on craft and rewriting the jokes and trying to get them right. So we got some stuff and some tools in our bag that we can always kind of go to. Mm-hmm. But whether you're, you know, humbly Chris Rock or the new guy, the work is still the same, like in the sense that they may have a faster turnaround because they understand the formula of joke telling. So they try a new joke on a Monday. By Friday, it's developed and it's ready to go. And they have the time, the stage time to get it, to flesh it out. But the work is still the work. It still has to get told night after night. Got to run it by, put it through a gauntlet of the formula and see, tweak that one word here. So that in itself is humbling because, again, every night it's a new audience. And so one night, sometimes you do a set and you feel like Dave Chappelle, and then you go to another club, and for whatever reason, I give you a true story. I remember one time I worked in a club and I'm hosting, and the audience, I'm hitting them with jokes, you know, I'm hosting them, and the audience is like kind of stale. So I got out of the material. I said, yeah, okay, so what's this about? What's going on? And the guy just told me, hey, man, you funny, but it's hot in here. Ain't no AC, so we laugh, we're going to sweat. I said, stuff like that is out of my control. He didn't want to laugh because he didn't want to sweat. But I ain't got nothing to do with that.
That's so right.
It's things like that. Sometimes it's out of your control. But it's always humbling. Like I said, we don't know if people going to laugh. You know, so when they do, it's like, cool, I'm on to something. So the audience, oof.
Have you always been funny? I mean, did this start as a child? When did you realize, okay, no, this is just what I have. This is just who I am. It's what I have to do. Usually it kind of starts young. So I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I remember in third grade, my teachers make us keep a journal. And I remember, I wish it had this journal, but I remember writing jokes, shooting on my friends in third grade, talking about this and all these other things. So I remember the idea of being there. So humbly, I think being funny is just a timing thing. I think it's a gift. I mean, some people, you got to have you got to have that. Because if I was doing stand-up or if I was still in that school program, people laughed in that school program. So that sort of charm is just, I'm just glad I forget sometimes about that. Because sometimes we're grateful for where we live, what our material things. But I like to thank God, too, for just my personality or the ability to say things right when it needs to be said.
How has your comedy helped you? How has it helped you as a child and growing up? Because I feel like, we all go through like these different experiences as children and as teenagers and even adults, young adults especially, where, it's kind of like these challenges, these trials and tribulations. How has comedy helped you?
Man, you know what? I think it's helped me to help other people in that, sometimes being able to say the right thing at the right moment can help bring people out of a funk or if they're in a low space. And I know that there's still people who depend on me in that way where I can tell when they're down, they'll call and be like, yo, man, I just wanna, hey, I'm going through this, I just wanna chop it up. And I give them a quick laugh, pull them out their thing. And we get out of it. So I've never been a negative kind of a kid, anything like that. Wasn't a class clown, not at all. I wasn't that. But I did realize that it helped me to not get beat up in high school with gangs. I was cool with the gang members and all of them because I could make them laugh and he's laughing, he's cutting up. So I always got a pass, But also just, I think the charm with teachers because they knew I was, I talked. But I wasn't a bad negative kid. They knew I'm just shooting, making people laugh, very light. But it's helped me survive, literally, man. It's helped me out of situations, So I'm grateful for it.
Excellent. Now you mentioned gangs. So I mean, you grew up in what you said. I saw what South Central. Tell me a
Yeah.
bit about what it was like for you growing up. Like, did you have anybody funny in your family, or is this something that just came about? And who was a comedian that helped inspire you?
I put it this way, my family is a household, they are funny, like they do voices and that sort of thing. So we keep a warm hearted kind of a house. As far as inspiration, I would say excuse me, I think any comedian today, we have to acknowledge Martin, just like the show, like that just and also on the acting side of that. Like seeing him play these different characters and also play somebody real. Like it was, when we watch Martin is not, it don't come off sitcom-y. Like it comes off like we just happen that there's a camera following these real people, real friends that really got love for each other, even though they shit on each other. We felt like Martin and Gina really loved each other, Tommy, and it's just a good ensemble. And so I would say, Martin in there as far as the acting side of things. But also, I remember watching, paying close attention to Chris Tucker's career when the fact doing stand up,
Because
very successful at that.
I didn't want to say anything, but there's something in you that reminds me of Chris Tucker. I don't.
That ain't a bad thing. I'll take that. I mean,
That, but I know a
yeah.
lot of people don't like. I'm not comparing you, but
For
I
sure.
can't help but feel the same, like the similar kind of energy. You know what I mean?
That's I remember watching him and I felt like, man, I was like, yo, he's really good. He's really successful at the stand-up side of things, started with Def Jam, and then just the progression of his trajectory over his career, how he went from the stand-up in the clubs, and then this massive film career, which was really, so shout out to Chris. And that's how, so when we started to work together, it was just a full circle. It was really amazing because a quick story. I was supposed to, one of my boys was performing at the Improv, shout out to Brandon Lewis. He's at the Hollywood Improv. And they said, it was Buzz. He's like, yo, Chris Tucker here. And I was like, well, I had met him already a couple of times on the club scene. He's like, no, you need to stick around and watch him. I was like, yo, I'm not performing. I can't perform my boy. I'm about to go back home because I wasn't into hanging out. Anyway, long story short, D-Ray Davis out of Chicago, shout out to him. He said, yo, Linda, has Chris Tucker seen you? I said, no, I haven't really seen you. We met, but he said, yo, he need to see you. I was like, I don't want to bother him because Chris Tucker's on stage working out new material. Long story short, D-Ray, he pushes me onto the stage. I says, yo, Chris, you got to watch London. So Chris steps to the side. I do a quick 5 minutes of a set. We exchange numbers. He did his research on me to see what kind of person I was. realized I was cool. That was just the buzz, and we started touring. I was just, you know, his opener, his feature really for like about, I think we did 3 years together. So that, just the fact that we click and I can call him my friend today, is just one of those things where I was like, yo, being in the right atmosphere, kind of manifesting that, and yeah. Oh, that it just called, it just, nothing's by accident.
Now that is the second time you've mentioned manifesting, so we have to stop right here for a moment.
Okay.
Okay. Manifestation.
You know
what is most important in your opinion as far as manifestation is concerned?
I think the most important thing about manifestation, as far as my concern, would be, I think a lot of people don't understand. When you manifest ideas, that's every, we can all, you know, close our eyes tight and say, I want this, I want that. But I think a lot of people tend to negate the responsibility that comes with that. Meaning, when we decide to manifest things, we got to understand that our hearts and our character are going to be put under the test to see if we can even manage the thing that we're manifesting. And I think a lot of people forget, they want what they want. But I'm like, okay, whatever. Same thing with, man, I want to be a singer. Okay, cool, no problem. I think that's why my career, no problem. But now, are you taking singing lessons? Are you studying the different genres? Are you figuring out?
That's
are
right.
you getting your writing up? Do you,
that's
are
right.
you taking care of your voice? Are you talking about you want to be a singer, but you still smoking and drinking?
That's
like,
right.
You think that helps with your vocals? So it's those sorts of things where I'm just like, yo, you got to know your character. A lot of people, simply put, a lot of people aren't where they really want to be in life because their character hasn't lined up to the thing that they're trying to, where they're trying to go. I'm like,
yep.
You know, it all works together. It's like, I gym, not because I'm a gym rat, but I understand I got to have some discipline. You know, so with that, do people don't have the discipline to really rock with what the thing, rock with the thing they're trying to manifest? I'm like, yo, you understand that with this acting thing, we can't, you, some of that clubbing and hanging out, you can't do it. I got work in the morning. That means
that's right.
I got to study on when everybody going to the thing, and you're going to Magic Mountain to the event.
That's right.
I'll give you this one. Even during when we were shooting Raising Kanan, things just starting to open back up, concerts booming. I wanted to go. There's a lot of events I wanted to go. I wanted to go to the lounge, but I'm like, hey, I can't afford to be sick. I got work. I got a cabin, right. All that stuff. So even like I said with the gym, it's discipline, you know, all that stuff.
Discipline, like, yes.
It's discipline, but a lot of people, they ain't ready for them. They're ready to do the service of manifesting, but not the work to really bring it
you
forth.
Know, and it's funny because, I mean, and I completely agree with you 110%. Discipline is absolutely one of the cornerstones of manifestation. It comes with being focused. I would also say what's really important with manifestation is the allowing process, because you can do all of the things and force and kind of like force. You start to force it almost like, I'm going to do it. I'm doing all these things. I'm doing this whole list here. Why is this not happening for me yet? And it's like, no. Because you have to allow faith.
Mm-hmm.
You have to allow things to happen on their own. And that's where I think spirituality comes involved, and it becomes full circle. You know, you have to have all the components. Yeah. You can't just have the discipline and the focus. You need to have the allowing and the faith.
Sure. But is that, you know, I think that's when people, and that's the difference between people who mess around and stick with it and they get what they want versus so who get discouraged. They're like, well, it ain't happening today and
right.
Next
Patience.
Week. So I guess it ain't. I'm like, no, you got to stay the course. You got to, and like you said, allowing it to unfold.
Yes.
How it
I just told somebody this morning, stay the course. Those are my exact words. Yes. So important. You know, we mentioned your photography, just to back up a little bit, rewind just really quick. Is there a table book? Is there a coffee table book that I don't know about?
No, that's still in the process. So
okay.
right now, some of the stuff is basically, even for example, this is one of the hiccups I ran into, which was I had all these photographs of people, but I was like, oh shoot, I gotta get them to sign off on it. So I gotta think paperwork. So I gotta redo a bunch of different images and lock in. Cause at the time when I first started, I wasn't thinking like that. I'll just practice. I said, I get to practice on these folks, have a conversation, I feed them, in exchange for the photo, we'll chop it up. But I really was just shooting. So I thought. But there really was a core purpose, which I later found. I said, oh, okay, now that I'm doing it, I gotta go back. Hey, would you mind signing here? Is that cool? Whatever the arrangement is.
I have to have them sign off and get the rights to their imagery. So, yeah, to their likeness. Process.
Yes, exactly.
It is. I know it's funny because we have these things, and that's the business part of it. That happens with every part of every art form. You don't really think about it. You just like you love your art and you want to do it. Now, community seems so important to you. Not seems, it is. I can tell it is so important to you. So, how can more people get involved? If somebody was interested, what do you think? What's your suggestion as far as how people can get involved? And why do you think, in your words, that it's so important to do so?
You know, again, I think a lot of times we can become removed and caught up in our own sphere of wellness. And, we're so used to the TV turning right on. We're used to the heat and the hot water. These things we take for granted. And not that we're trying to be mean people, but you get caught up in life. So what I like to do is I like to slow down the process. And then also, I'm always outside. So meaning, I walk around New York, you know what I'm saying? I walk around LA, I'm seeing people on bus stops, and I'm very present with people. And so when you take a little bit of time to notice these kinds of things, if you have your kind of heart, it begins to change the way you see things. You'd be like, you know what, man? I'm looking at this homeless person, especially in LA. You literally can come out of a 5-star restaurant and it be people destitute. It's overwhelming. And so much so that when I was in New York, I was looking for more homeless people then he told me, he said, oh, because it's cold, so I'm not eating the subway. And I didn't really realize the dynamic, because in LA, it's just a plethora. It's just insane. So the important thing about that is when you start dealing with community, that's just another one of those tools that helps us to stay humble. And you realize, man, I thought my issue was bad. I'm mad that I paid my credit card late. Wait, so you can pay it? Okay, it's perspective. A lot of times people will complain, I gotta put my car in the shop.
You have a car? That's the reason why the bigger picture. That's all about perspective. That's why it's so important. People miss that. You get so hung up on all these other things that are truly, in the grand scheme of things, are really not that important to your, you know, your wellness, in a sense. You can create these obstacles, you know.
The bigger picture, I know, that's a great name.
Oh, thanks. You talk about, and we're going to talk about something that you named, because I was just about to switch over on you.
Okay.
Now, you talk about these different things in London's White Tea Talks. And I have watched every single one. I'm letting you know.
I'm ready.
Well, no, I just want to know. All right. First of all, why did you start? And how do you come up with the topics?
So basically, this started because I would go, I would do like these rants on my Instagram stories.
Mm-hmm.
And people would ask me about them, but they would delete. And so they said, why don't you start saving them? Because also, too, I was trying to figure out my voice. I was like, what's my social media? I have my friends. Shout out to my boy, Tony Baker. He does voiceovers. Commentary on side by side videos, and so my friends everyone had a voice. I just felt like I didn't have one. And so, and then I realized that, oh, my voice is what I just do naturally. I don't have to go out of my way to try to figure out content. Just right. What is it that I do? I feel I can have a conversation with anybody. So that worked for me. So I used to get these questions. And sometimes women would be like, you know, London, why are, basically questions would be based around the ideas of why aren't they getting the results they want from God? And what I was simply doing was explaining to men and women. A lot of times I'm like, well, here are some of the, basically, here are some things that guys do. That not, because I'm not ever trying to tell a woman how to be a woman, but I'm just explaining why guys respond the way that we do to the things right. that women do. Now, women don't have to ever listen. It's not about that. It's just on a simple form. For example, now I understand that a lot of women will, when they write a text message to a guy mm-hmm. and they got something on their heart that's pressing, mm-hmm. I understand they want to get the message. They want to get the words out. They want the guy to hear them. I got it. That's cool. No problem. However, if you're trying to communicate with a guy, I'm just simply saying now, you, if you want to write that trilogy, no problem. Get it off your chest. Cool. It's no, it's cool. But now, if you want the guy to read what you have to say,
yeah.
it behoove you to just hit him with the bullet points. Just hit him with whatever that is. And, say, and then he'll say, hey, well, what you mean? Then you get time to explain. But if you come out the gate with that, what? The guy'd be like, he's not paying attention to that. He's not even.
What about the machine gun text where it's just like blurb, 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 blurb? Does that not work?
It's one of those things.
That's bullet points. Boop, boop, boop.
Bullet point, but I'm guaranteeing you that guy's going to take the time to go, all right. It's not overwhelming. Because when God sees one message, he thinks emotional, he thinks overwhelming. So God's be like, oh, I don't want to. And he just don't even want. And that's the only thing. I'm like, yo, if you want to be heard, and I know you got something valid to say, right. here's one way that you might want to communicate. That's all. Now, again, do they have to know? Okay, for example, here's another one. Here's another one. When a guy, there are some women, right? When they're with the guy intimately, they don't make any noise, right? Now, I understand some women are quiet, and I'm like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. However, when a woman makes noise in the bed on an intimate level, mm-hmm. her moans and groans and all of that
is direction.
They act as a navigation.
Yeah, direction.
So what does this mean? Meaning when the way she moans and groans lets the guy know, oh, I probably should stay in this area. I should probably let me try this. Let me turn around. Okay,
look, I don't understand. Who stays quiet? If it's silent in the room, that means something's not right.
I'm gonna tell you, because this is one of the reasons. Sometimes women, if it's a new situation with a guy, sometimes women aren't so loud because they're filling him out. They're just trying to see what the thing is, and they don't know what the style is. Some guys, they want loud, let's go. Every guy has a story about being with a shy girl, and it's like, I'm like, once I had to check and see if she was breathing. I said, you okay? Come on, you got to make some noise. But later she grew into noise. But at first, she said, hey, I'm just, you know.
So it sounds like dead fish. It sounds like dead fish syndrome. That's what it sounds like to me, like a dead fish. You just chilling like a dead. No, that's not good. Now, have you ever considered a pilot for all this stuff? Have you ever considered writing? Because you're a comedian. You know, putting all this together.
I have thought about some stuff. I have to answer your question. Yes, I was just trying to figure out really where I want to go, and then also try to find a lane that wasn't already touched on.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, what's my angle to this? But that's why these white tea talks, just I'm finding this stuff out about myself. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that is really how I feel, or, you know, again, like men cheating versus women cheating and why that is and what's the difference in that and how, you know, because I know sometimes with these discussions, women like to deflect. They say, well, it goes both ways. I'm like, it's not quite the same. But sometimes it makes it hard to see, like cheating. Cheating is not for, I'm not saying that when a man cheats, it's right. I'm not justifying. But what I will say, though, when a guy cheats and a man cheats, it's not the same. A guy can really be with a woman, right? He can have a girlfriend or wife, whatever.
Right.
He can go be with girl number two and not like her. He can just with her and now, of course, I know a lot of women understand because they're like, how can a guy be with a woman he's not into? I'm like, simply, he can compartmentalize, non-emotionally, as long as that woman is legal, breathing.
Legal,
breathing, and willing, guy's standards are low. It just to be with a woman, as long as she consents to it, she's old enough, and she's alive. Guys, that's how simple guys are. I'm not saying that it's right. But a lot of times women beat themselves up because the guy steps out on them. I'm like, it's not because he didn't like you. He, in fact, emotionally, you have his whole heart.
I hear you. It's really not that complicated, but it's still, to me, kind of just, it bewilders me. Just what you just said.
it's wild. I mean, that's why sometimes a guy can be with a side woman, and that side woman will make him really appreciate his real woman. That's a real thing. Because the girl on the side don't have his heart. He's not connected to her emotionally. She cool, but she ain't got the essence of his lady. So he'll hug her. I mean, he'll be with that woman. But he come home, he's like, man, I got to do this girl.
Let me tell you, I wish we had more time. Because it has been such a pleasure. You talked to, again, my business partner and my publisher, Being Original Urban Magazine. You talked to him twice. So thank you for coming to chat with me. It has been such a pleasure. Thank you very much. Keep spreading your light in the world. I'm going to keep looking for that photography book.
Yes.
Okay. And I want you to stay up, stay focused, stay blessed. Are there any shout outs before we go?
Hey, man, shout out to the people who watched the show, watched the interview. Appreciate you guys. Thank you for my followers at Real London Brown. Appreciate my family and friends.
Yes, you can find London Brown all over, everywhere. He is not hard to find. And you need to stay tuned for his London's White Tea Talk, because they are hilarious, very enjoyable. I hope that you have a blessed night. All right?
Thank you.
Stay up. Bye.